Melanin and Me, exploring the Black woman's experiences in Britain.
Hey, lovely ladies, welcome back to Melanin and Me. Before we dive into today's episode, we want to remind you how you can stay up to date with our latest content. We release episode every Thursday, so make sure to subscribe to Melanin and Me on your preferred podcast platform so that you don't miss out on any episodes. You can also follow our inspiring content on social media by searching melanin_and_me on Instagram, or find us on Facebook at Melanin and Me UK. If you felt empowered or motivated from any of our episodes, we love to hear it, so feel free to contact us by emailing melaninandme@yahoo.com or slide on in on our DMs on our social accounts. Don't forget to share some love, drop us a review, and share with any of your fellow queens who might be uplifted by tuning into Melanin and Me. For now, enjoy today's episode.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Melanin and Me. Today with me and Ash, we've got Dr. Tomi, who's a GP registrar, and she's really, really passionate about health inequalities. So really, really excited to have you on the podcast. Dr. Tomi, please, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do both personally and professionally, please?
Hello, thank you for having me on the podcast. As you said, I am a GP registrar, so I've been a doctor for about 7 years now, and I'm sub-specialising in primary care.
Being a GP. 7 years is a very long time. I bet you've seen some madness in your time.
that one is a topic for another podcast entirely. But outside of work, I'm mum to two littles. They are 4 and 2, and they are absolutely full of energy, and they keep me and my husband very busy, bless them.
Ray's got lots of surrogate children because she's a PE teacher, so she hasn't got any directly, but she's always got stories of her kids from her day to day.
Honestly, I don't know what's in the waters at the minute, but it seems to be like cuckoo land. I go in school and I turn into them, and I come home and I'm like, I just need an hour where I don't talk to anyone, I don't do anything to do with talking.
Everyone, let's play who can be quiet the longest.
Yeah. Sleeping lions is a good game. That's always a good one for coaching and stuff.
But my two just think, oh, then they get really silly and giggly, and it is a lot. Right.
Well, we are so, so grateful to have you with us today. And obviously, we're going to talk today about mental health, which, as we know, is such a key topic in society today. So, I mean, particularly after the pandemic, we've had lockdowns and, you know, it's affected all of us in many different ways. But more specifically today, we're going to talk about mental health trends in the LGBTQIA+ community. So before we get into it, can you please just tell us, for our listeners, just break down the acronym for us, and then obviously just tell us a little bit about how we might define mental health.
Yeah, so fab question. A lot of people are put off somewhat by all the letters, but LGBTQIA star stands for lesbian. Gosh, you even got me to pause it for a moment. Lesbian. Like, so many letters: bisexual, trans, intersex, asexual. It's a lot. It's a very, very, very big umbrella category for anybody who doesn't regard themselves as being heterosexual. Mm-hmm. And in the case of trans, being cisgender, so feeling as though they're in a different gender to their biological sex they were born in. Mm-hmm. And mental health is really, really multifaceted and wide ranging. And that can be anything from depression and low mood or anxiety to more serious, what we call serious mental health conditions like bipolar and schizophrenia. So big old thing, hard to quantify because you can't see it. But
yeah. And I think, I mean, when I've done sort of mental health training and stuff before, often people say they kind of think of it as something we often hear about, all the negative challenges or issues or conditions that people might have related to mental health. But that doesn't, you know, I think one of the key things that I know that I took away was the fact that we all have mental health. It's not something, you know, it's just, it's on a spectrum. So actually our mental health can either be quite poor, or it can be quite good, and it just kind of fluctuates, you know. And I think that really helped me kind of understand mental health a bit better.
Yeah, definitely. So health isn't just the absence of disease, it's about people feeling good overall, and mental health is a big part of that, because I know traditionally in society we look a lot at health as being not sick from a physical point of view, but actually there's a lot more to being healthy and feeling happy in yourself than just whether or not your chest is hurting.
And as Ash has just alluded to, it has a lot to do with that spectrum, because me personally, I know when it's summertime, like my mood is sky high, absolutely buzzing.
Summertime. Yeah.
And then when it's winter, when it's like, it is how it is, your mood naturally, I find personally, it's just a little bit under par. So it's not up there as it would be normally. So yeah, there is a massive difference in weather as well, and that has an impact, which is interesting.
Oh. Yeah, we actually do have a medical term for that. We call that seasonal affective disorder. Literally, the change of the weather sort of brings your mood down a bit. And yeah. I'm just saying, I am definitely a summer kind of gal.
Yeah.
When the sun's on, I feel my energy levels dipping as well.
I think that's the melanin, though. I think that's where we're all, you know, like our ancestors to us are saying, you need to be in the heat, girls. Yeah. You need to be in the heat.
I'm not made. I always say this. I'm like, I'm not made for this weather. And like teaching outside as well. You've got them PE teachers that are always in shorts. And I'm just like, I'm cold just looking at you. Never mind. Yeah. Like, it's mad. So Dr. Tomi, can you tell us a little bit more about what tends to be the most common mental health challenges in the LGBTQ plus community, and why do you think that is?
Yeah, so as I've kind of alluded to already, and that as we all have, there's a big spectrum of what constitutes mental health problems. So more looking at the negatives than anything now. And that people who identify as LGBT have a more increased risk of things like depression, more risk of anxiety. They're often, if you're looking at a population point of view, then if you identify as LGBT or T, then you are more likely to have tried to commit suicide in the past.
Oh, wow. You're more likely
to have a lot of social problems going on to do with mental health. So yeah, it's a really big topic and a big problem.
Yeah. Do you find there's a difference with regards to like your white sort of like British community compared to your black and brown community? Do you think there's a difference there, and why do we think there is that difference?
Yeah, I think we do see that with the white British population, when we talk about mental health, there isn't as much stigma associated with it. There's definitely a lot more coming from black or brown patients.
Yeah.
And sometimes, whereas somebody from a Caucasian background might say, I'm really struggling with my mood, or I'm really struggling with anxiety. Someone from a ethnic background might say, I'm feeling really tired, or, you know, just feeling a bit run down, rather than my mental state is suffering. So I think it's not really talked about as much in our culture. So to someone say, actually, my mental health is doing bits, a lot of people will just be like, you know, stop it.
And I think on that as well, like, we're talking obviously today more specifically in terms of LGBT community, you know, that's one thing where I feel as though as well within the black and brown community that it's not as accepted to come out, and whether that's to be transitioning or whether it's to come out about your sexuality. And, you know, like, I know from a Caribbean perspective, you know, it's still not, you know, it's not legal, it's not accepted. And, you know, from there's still a lot of countries where, you know, you can face the death penalty, you know, if you're announced to be, you know, gay or transgender, etc. So we've still got a lot of work to do. And I think, you know, coming from a lot of countries where, you know, whether that's African, Caribbean countries, etc., actually, if it's still not deemed to be as accepted. So, you know, do you think that has, you know, that must have an impact on mental health, right?
Definitely. If you come from a family background where you know that being gay or being trans is not okay, then chances are you don't really have people you can talk to about it in your family. You know, you have to outside your family for people to talk to confide in, and then that probably will have a knock-on effect in your confidence and in your personal happiness. And that's just within your community. So obviously it's difficult to grow up in a house where you don't feel like you can be yourself. That's going to have longer reigning consequences than for people who are comfortable and confident in themselves. So definitely a big problem. And we know a lot of people have a lot of social problems with this, because, you know, you come out to your parents and they pick you up. What do you do? Where do you go? It is a big problem.
Big question. How do we change that cycle? What do we need to do to change that cycle?
Because we're here for the change.
We're here.
See, I'm here for the change completely. We just need to accept that it's not a choice. People don't wake up one day and decide, I think I'm going to try and upset my family by I don't think that's the case at all. And I know that there's a lot of ties to religion and culture that we just think it's not okay. But really, we seem to be more accepting of each other, because ultimately nobody chooses to be different. Nobody chooses to try and get ostracized by their family. It's just the way we are. And if we were kinder to each other, we would all be happier.
Absolutely. I think we're all here for the kindness and the positive vibe. So that's, yeah, it's definitely one, some food for thought there, guys. And I mean, obviously you talked about depression there, and obviously the knock-on impact that that's likely to have in this community. Suicide is not, it's not a sexy topic to discuss. It's not something that's easy for a lot of people to talk about, but we know that it's so common, and it's something that we need to get more comfortable with talking about. So, you know, what would you say is are the messages that we need to be sending about regarding suicide? What do we need to be shouting about and letting people know about?
Just really the basis of it is it's okay not to be okay. And, you know, suicide, I often think of it as a permanent solution to the temporary problem. It's understanding that things can get on top of you and life can be really hard, but, you know, it's the sort of thing that if you have some support, you can hopefully get through and come out on the other side and shine. You know, the stats have shown that over half of LGBT young people and 3/4 of trans people have deliberately harmed themselves. And you know, if you self-harm, then you're at increased risk of trying to die by suicide. And it's really sad and it's really awful. I think they say 84% of trans people have considered suicide, and half of the people have made an attempt. And, you know, if we talk about it more, you tell your friend you're struggling, you feel like there are people you can talk to, you know, you go and talk to your doctors about how you're feeling, then hopefully we can support you, we can help, and, you know, hopefully make your life feel a little bit easier.
Yeah, with that comes a lot of putting your pride to the side and making sure that you are in that space where you're able to talk to people. I know at school I've had kids come to me and where they experience really low moods and they are having those negative sort of like waves in their brains where they're thinking maybe this is the best option. What I always say is that it's really, really good to sort of like keep a journal. So if you're finding it really difficult to talk to someone, keeping that journal, it helps you rather than internalizing those thoughts and feeling. It really does help you. And it's a practice that I'm practicing myself from a friend, actually. Not that I'm feeling suicidal, but just like whenever you have those low moods and you're like, oh, I just feel a bit off, I just need a bit of time to like write those points down and just like get them out rather than internalizing. For me personally, that's a little hint and tip I would give our listeners out there.
I don't even think it needs to be, you know, like you say, you don't need to be at that point of feeling an emotion. Like, I think that just reflection is a helpful tool that we could all practice more often, you know, like even if your journal for that day is just to shout about what you're grateful for and practice gratitude, or just, it kind of just makes you feel a little bit more okay with your feelings. You can just sit with them, whether they're good or bad. So I think that's a really, and it's so lovely that you're able to share that, Ray, with your students, because I'm sure that's a skill they'll take with them throughout.
I hope so. I hope so. Some of them, I do wonder, I'm like, I know it's not going to be in your brain in the next 5 minutes. But what's up? Select few. Yeah, I hope it does help. Definitely.
I'm sure it would help because, yeah, definitely a problem shared is a problem halved. And even if that problem is shared with your paper, then it's out there.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. How people can feel because of the fact they may have been brought up in a household where they don't feel as, you know, they can be as accepted or feel themselves. And I guess that with that comes a form of isolation and feeling as though there's sort of a very like small circle or very little people that you can trust. And I wonder whether as well, you know, when we talk about sort of racism and things like that, we talk about the fact that actually it's almost like a paper cut, you know, like the more and more you have those comments, those insults, etc., it feels as though you get a paper cut and it just happens time and time again. And actually they build up. You know, we know they build up those microaggressions that aren't micro. They're nothing about them is micro, but you know, and I imagine that it's exactly the same. And for, you know, especially with the intersectionality, you know, if you're a, you know, somebody from the Black or Brown community, you've got that element of potential racism in addition to the discrimination because of your sexuality or your, you know, your gender status.
We know that Black and Brown people have worse health outcomes compared to the white population. And then also we know that the LGBTQ community have worse health outcomes. And we know that people with mental health problems have worse outcomes. So if you combine the three, it's hard. It's really hard. And we as doctors and as health professionals, we need to make sure that we are making the environment as inclusive as possible so people feel comfortable and feel safe coming to talk to us. Because if you're feeling alone, and you can't talk to your doctor, you can't talk to your friend, you can't talk to your family, who would you talk to?
Also, I feel like there's a massive sort of like hurdle for us to jump over with the pandemic as well. That's another sort of like factor that's been put in there. I think I heard a stat, I can't remember exactly what it was, but essentially what they were talking about is that during the pandemic, because you never had anywhere with the lockdown, because you never had anywhere to go and offload. So for example, you couldn't go out with your friends and live your best life in that moment. You were constantly in this pressure and in this environment. So if you're finding it challenging being with your family because you're not out yet, for example, that mental health and well-being does take a toll, and worse could happen. So you are right in terms of getting those conversations started.
Yeah. And if you don't feel safe and you're almost pressure pot or cooker, you're stuck at home with your people and you've got no escape, it's a recipe for disaster, really, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
It's and really a lot of people who identify LGBT, they often, you know, create a family of their friends. And if you can't go and see your family or friends, it's rough, it's tough. The pandemic has really hit a lot of people very hard, and the isolation is definitely worsening people's mental health, for sure.
Yeah. If we've got any listeners that have personal challenges, or friends or families or peers that they know of who are struggling with their mental health, what advice would you give, and where can they go for that help? Because I know we've already discussed a little bit, but we just want a little bit extra. So for our listeners, they can help themselves and help those around them as well.
Yeah. So honestly, there are tons of resources out there. If you want to speak to your doctor, that is awesome. We would love to hear about you. Mm-hmm. But we know that everyone feels comfortable doing so. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if you go online and you literally type in the words, "I am struggling," you will find a wealth of resources. So Mind, for example, are doing some really great things. They're a charity who deal with mental health at the forefront, really. We've got other places you can go to, like the Samaritans. So if you're feeling really fraught, end of your tether, and want to speak to somebody who, you know, you don't know, you want to speak to a stranger and just offload some, they are there. Mm-hmm. Talking more about LGBT places, I suppose you can go to. I know locally we've got what we call the LGBT Bucks. I'm based in Buckinghamshire.
Yeah.
But we have lots of places like support service. So support you at org.uk can support LGBT people with particularly with mental health. And I'm sure that there'll be some lovely place I can leave a list of resources that people can access if they feel like they want to find places outside maybe of their friendship group, outside of their GP.
Yeah, definitely. We can add all of these to the footnotes as well. So any resources, please send them our way. and we will put those on the footnote, because I'm sure they'll be very, very useful.
Yeah. And we've talked about sort of like direct signposting to services and some really good organizations that you mentioned there. And obviously, Ray, you mentioned the journaling option. Do you think there's anything else, you know, if somebody's listening in and they're maybe not ready for a service, and, you know, but they know that they're really struggling and this is already resonating, like, is there anything else that you feel, you know, people could do, or any advice that we can give?
So if you go on the NHS's apps list, there are literally hundreds, it seems like, of apps you can access that will help give you some support with your mental health, and you never need to speak to anybody at all. There are things like cognitive behavioral therapy and other things that you can access by yourself in the privacy and comfort of your own home, just sort of help you sort of break out of the cycle of your thoughts and your behavior and your mood all being linked. So if you can, you know, break out of the sitting at home feeling really low, not doing anything, and just change it up a bit, then, you know, things start to pick up a bit more for you because you're not sat festering. So that's what you can actually access without having to speak to a GP at all.
Amazing. Awesome. I was just going to ask, I'm really, really interested to know how you got to be in this moment like a doctor and a registrar. Is it something that you've always wanted to do? I know we're digressing a bit, but I'm really interested to find out about people's journeys and how they got to where they are.
Honestly, I can't even remember what made me want to be a doctor in the first place. I'm sure a good chunk of that was, I'm Nigerian, and I'm sure my parents
doctor. You had no other option, basically.
Oh, yes. So when I said, Mum, I want to be a doctor, she was like, excellent. How are we going to make that happen?
Yeah. Nice. So, yeah,
went there straight from school, went to uni, awesome 6 years at university. And then I decided, actually, after doing a couple of years of foundation training, that I really like primary care. I like being out in the community with people and trying to keep them out of hospital. And it's just a really interesting mix because you never know what's going to come through the door.
Yeah, it's really, really nice to see and hear about that, because we certainly need more melanated doctors. Personally, yeah. I don't know how everybody else feels, but honestly, when I go to the doctors and I see someone who's melanated, I just get so happy. I'm like, yes, I'm going to get a proper skin. I know that's really bad to say. Is that bad to say?
You said it now.
Love it. Honestly, I come out and I'm like, yes, I'm going in there. I'm going to get a proper look at. And it's weird. I don't know. It's a bias that I have that I need to get out of, because, well, I don't know.
It is a nice feeling, and we can see it. I love when I see, you know, my fellow Black women as patients, and I see the look of recognition, and they're like, yes.
You got it.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's like that, it's like the nod in the street type thing, isn't it? It's like the, hey, sister, I see you. It's this, that. And I think, you know, there's also that, and I know this sounds quite cheesy and like definitely digresses, but it's also that whole, we know what you've had to go through to get where you are, and that being in that space is tough. Like, just your, you know, the way you're just telling me you enjoyed your 6 years at university, like my three were hard enough as it was. So, you know, like, just not the academic part, but also all the social challenges you would have had to experience. You know, we had it when obviously we had our recording episode with Dr. Bemi, you know, we're talking about actually being a minority in that sector, it does have its challenges, you know. So I think that's also just, although it does relieve your pressure, it reassures you, Ray, when you go into the surgery. Also, I think there's probably that part of you that's like, do you know what, I'm actually proud, even though you don't know that person.
Yeah, 100%. Definitely, I agree.
I'm completely the same. Shameless with it.
Shameless. Let's be unapologetically proud.
Yeah, honestly. Maybe that's what I need to do. So I'm going to retract my statement. I don't feel bad.
Yes, exactly. Next time, I dare you to go fist bump your nurse. I dare you. Honestly, just spudder. Give her a spud. So we talk about the term allies. So that's often thrown around. And we talk about this in the ethnically diverse community. So, you know, we talk about allies in the workplace or friends, family, etc. And also in the LGBTQIA plus community as well. So can you just explain a little bit for people who maybe have never heard of this, what it means, and maybe what traits as well make a strong ally that may have a real genuine impact?
Yeah, so I say an ally is somebody who doesn't themselves identify within a particular community, but wants to use their own privilege to help support them and get their voices out there and get them heard. So a lot of, so when we talked about the acronym, the LGBTQIA, some people think that the A is for ally, but actually it's not. So allies are important in that they are a great form of support, but the point of an ally is not to take away from the voices of the people that we're talking about. We don't try and not to take away from the LGBT community. We try and boost them and support them so that they're the people who can talk. Mm. Same with the ethnically diverse, as you say. So having white allies who want to sort of advance our cause and help us out are awesome. But if they're the only people speaking, that's a problem.
Yeah, I heard an interesting sort of like definition with regards to allies. It was actually this week I was listening to the Kelechi's podcast, Say Your Mind, and she was sort of, I absolutely love that lady. And she was sort of like saying, like, to be an ally is just to be a decent human being. Like, And she was sort of like explaining the term allies, and to be an ally is essentially to just be a decent human being and to want equality for everybody. So it doesn't need to be this big thing that we sort of like held our hands high for. It should just be natural, and it should be something that we all do it. Whenever we see any injustices or inequalities, we should be stepping up and having those conversations. So I thought it was an interesting way of looking at it, because I never saw it through that lens.
But also, like, does that not just show that it's quite rare to have genuine, like, it's that open-mindedness. It's that, you know, like, we all come and, you know, we all have our biases. We all have the things that we're, that make us feel more at ease, more at comfort, you know, but actually, it's quite rare. The thing I've definitely found rare is people who are who will take people as they are, no matter who, what background they come from, no matter, you know, they're really genuinely inclusive. And one of the people that I've started working with this year, she joined our organization throughout the pandemic, and honestly, it was so refreshing. And it was so, and honestly, like, I wouldn't have been able to navigate some of the things that I have done, where I have experienced microaggressions or racism and things in the workplace that a lot of people are naive to, or just haven't, you know, they're just so blissfully unaware. And she's just been absolutely fantastic at being able to listen and be able to kind of champion in the right ways, champion in the right, so, you know, if we're in a group meeting and something's said and it's just not quite right, and you don't feel yourself because you're the only brown face on screen, and actually, you know, I don't want to be that person who's the, oh, they're, you know, they're bringing it up again. Bringing that card up again, and having somebody fighting your corner, not that they should need to, but I can tell you now, it makes the world of difference, and it does just make you feel as though somebody's got your back. And honestly, like, it really does. And I think one thing I would suggest for people is, if there's anyone listening who recognizes that, and who maybe doesn't feel the courage to speak out, or doesn't feel the courage to maybe stand up for their peers in those instances, like, just do it. Just, you know, be true to yourself, like, go with your gut, because you don't know how much that could impact somebody's day. For the positive.
And I think the key thing to take away as well with allyship is that element of, you're not taking away the voices of those that are underprivileged, and that you're not dismissing how they're feeling and how they are perceiving the situation. So it's all about giving them that voice and that platform to feel like themselves, and being like, you know what you did there wasn't right, and I'm going to stand up for this person, but not to take away from that person, if that makes sense. There's a fine balance there.
Yeah, definitely. It's people recognizing that their lives are maybe not easier than other people because of privilege, but, you know, their specific circumstances don't make it harder, and then using that for good, using it as a force for good.
Yeah. And that comes first with the acknowledgement and the understanding of what privilege is. And I think as soon as people do, they put themselves in a scenario where they will educate, they will understand, they will be curious about it and understand how that makes them fit within that puzzle. I think they're the people, as certainly, like I say, through my experience, who are the ones who can then use it positively and use it for good. And yeah, it's a very powerful thing.
Just to go back a little bit, I'm just going to rewind it back. I saw a stat and I was absolutely baffled. So it was like LGBTQ plus youths twice as likely to contemplate suicide as their non-LGBTQ plus counterparts. Now, that stat for me is absolutely baffling and really, really alarming. Have you got anything to say, Dr. Tomi, about the youth and that LGBTQ plus youth and how we can particularly support that group of people? Because I feel like the support they require is slightly different to your over 18s, your over 21s.
Definitely. And there are specific groups that focus on young LGBTQ people and in giving them that support, because as you say, the rates of self-harm, the rates of attempted suicide are a lot higher. And these are babies who really need to be protected. And there are definitely groups out there, again, always plug in with GPs, but you know, your GP is there to support you through this. Mm-hmm. And even if you are under 16, you are allowed to come and talk to us about things. But you don't have to tell your parents if you don't want us to, you know, part of it's by keeping you safe. But it's really important that people feel like they have places they can go to, people they can speak to, because as we've said, support is important. It's really important.
And you know, I guess one of the things, I can't remember if it was a documentary or something, and it really struck a chord with me, because they were talking about safe spaces for the LGBT community, and they talked about the fact that a lot of that is associated or surrounded by bars, pubs, clubs. You know, you have gay bars, you have, you know, it's always linked to social. So yeah, for somebody that maybe doesn't feel comfortable in that scene, doesn't drink alcohol, doesn't like the partying scene or anything like that, you know, maybe is potentially more introvert as well, it almost makes it feel as though for somebody who is maybe going through a transition phase, or they maybe are a little bit younger, and actually that there's nothing, you know, unless I go to a gay bar, I'm never going to meet anybody like me. But that, you know, that certainly isn't the case, is it?
No, I mean, it definitely used to be that if you wanted to meet people like you, you've got to go underground. You've got to, you know, put yourself in potentially dangerous situations just to be out with people like yourself. But no, it's changing up there. The world is expanding, and, you know, sources of support are expanding with it. And the internet can be a force for, you know, great joy and sometimes less awesome things. But, you know, if you want to find your people, you can find them. You can find them. There will definitely be support out there for you.
Sure.
Social media is a big one as well, isn't it? So your Twitter, your Instagram, I don't know about Facebook, Ash.
Stop. Look, doctor, I'm telling you, this girl does not rate me because I have Facebook. She tells me that it's not cool. You're too old. What are you doing? Get on Snapchat. And I'm like, no, absolutely not. Don't hate Facebook.
No, I'm never getting to my Facebook. I need to keep abreast of what the people from yesteryear are doing with themselves.
See, I'm not alone.
I just, we're just going to fast forward a bit. We're coming sort of like to the end of the episode. I'm just going to ask, what advice would you give your 15-year-old self if you were to rewind back all those years back, if you had to have a look at the journey that you've had to where you are now, Dr. Tomi, a whole doctor, a GP registrar, what advice would you give your 15-year-old self?
I'd say, honestly, enjoy it. You will get there. Please don't be stressed.
Yeah.
There is more than work, but, you know, yeah, you will love it. You'll love it. You'll meet your people and you'll do bits. You'll absolutely
yes.
do bits.
Yes.
Nice.
Too blessed to be stressed. I love it. Love it. Love it. Dr. Tomi, thank you so much for speaking with us today. Oh, no, I'm not going to forget. Ray will kill me if I forget. Go on, Ray.
I was just going to ask, what are your top three songs that you're currently listening to on your playlist?
Oh my gosh, I'm such a cringy mum. My
go on, give us some 80s or something. Go on.
Not gonna lie, but All I Want for Christmas Is You. Yes.
Pop a yes.
Call. Love a bit of Mariah.
Oh yes.
We'll let you off because it's the 2nd of December. Because
that's November, my favourite Christmas song.
Yes. That or Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer by DMX. Depends on the mood at the time. Mood at the time.
She said the DMX Christmas song.
Do you know
it? I know it.
It's not as bad. Have you heard the Snoop Dogg I don't know what his one. There's a real ghetto Snoop Dogg one as well. No shame. No shame. I'm gonna look
that Snoop Christmas.
And then one more.
Oh my gosh, Clash, Stormzy, Dave. I don't know why, but that song does something to me.
Yeah.
I love it.
Love that.
Diverse playlist. I like it.
I feel like last time Bemi gave us some classical, and now we've got some Christmas. We've got all sorts in this playlist. I'm telling you, this is the place to go.
This nonsensical by the end of it, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, guys, if you do want to find our playlist, literally just go to Apple Music and type in Melanin and Me, and you should get your playlist coming up. You will see our logo, and just hit that shuffle button and see what you get, because we're all things diverse, that's for sure. But anyway, we just are going to finish up there. So Dr. Tomi, thank you so much again for talking to us today about a very pivotal topic. And obviously we'll put all the support links that you mentioned and referenced into the footnotes. And we are just very grateful to have this conversation. We want people to know that, you know, if you have been, you've got something from today, you've managed to, you know, maybe navigate something or just see something through a different lens, you know, do feedback, do give us a review, do tell us, you know, how you got on, give us a comment, etc. But we hope you got something from it today. Thank you so much for joining us, and we hope you enjoyed the episode.
So that's a wrap on today's episode. We hope you enjoyed it and that you gained something positive from listening in. Whether that be you gained a new perspective, got some tips and tricks to motivate and inspire you, or if it just made you smile. Don't forget to like, share, subscribe, and leave a review so that you don't miss any upcoming episodes, and so we can bring you even more of the content that you love. Until next time, stay blessed, wear that crown with pride, and keep shining.